the DOC, the Department of Correction need to at least take ownership. They need to take ownership for a lot of people coming home untreated. And trauma is real. And you're going to hear that in season two when my car was stolen, that I was just triggered to a space that nobody wanted to be in. And I realized that I need help. And I went to therapy because it was affecting my life. It was affecting my family's life, the people that love me. And then I started getting phone calls from people. It's like, I'm going through the same thing. But they're ashamed to speak about it because I don't want you to think I'm crazy because I'm going through a crisis. You know, I want to live up to that expectation. I'm a Pulitzer Prize winner. I'm this. But at the end of the day, I'm human, and I'm a person that served 31 years incarcerated without ever seeing a therapist. Mm-hmm.
And we're going to do part two and post online at democracynow.org. We're also going to do an interview in Spanish, which, where you can go to our Spanish website, link to it at democracynow.org. David Luis Suave Gonzalez, subject and co-executive producer of the Pulitzer Prize-winning podcast Suave. His new book, From Prison to the Pulitzer Prizes, and the Pulitzer Prize-winning producer and journalist, Mariana Hossa.
You are tuned to KBOO, Portland.
Well, hello. What's this? Would you look at that? It's KBOO's special Earth Day Marathon coming up on Tuesday, April 22nd. Looks like it'll feature local environmental advocates, native perspectives, earth-conscious music, radio shows en Espanol, and plenty of nature sounds. A full day's worth, it looks like. KBOO's Earth Day programming kicks off on Monday, April 21st at 10 p.m. and runs through 10 p.m. Tuesday. All the information is online at kboo.fm/earthday. That's kboo.fm/earthday. Leave it better than you found it.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. The Development and Events Committee meets on the third Monday of the month at 5:30 p.m. This month's meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
Good morning and welcome to More Talk Radio on your community radio station, KBOO FM. 90.7 in Portland, 91.9 in Hood River, 104.3 in Corvallis, and via the World Wide Web, it is KBOO FM. Today is Monday, April 14th, 2025. I'm Cecil Prescott, and thank you so much for being a part of this program and being a part of our community. Our numbers, if you would like to call and participate in our conversations, are 503-231-8187. Thank you so much for all you are doing and all you continue to do to not only support, but continue to strengthen not only this radio station and this community, but indeed the world. A few minutes ago, I had a short conversation with our engineer, and among the things we talked about were, how are things with you this day? So how are things with you? Or as some of those people who went before us a good way to ask is how are the children? How will the children be? And in this time of mass uncertainty and confusion and social upheaval, that question, how are the children, remains appropriate. In these troubling times and times of confusion, people find many different sources for information and different ways in which to confront the challenges we face. One thing that I am treating myself to, I suppose it's a good way to say it, is to read the writings of people who have been involved in movements and struggles in this country and indeed throughout the world in this century and in centuries past for inspiration, for insight, and for quite basic knowledge of things to do and things not to do. Certainly those of us who are living in this era are not the first generation or the first group of people to face challenges, especially as we in this country and indeed throughout the world see this rise in authoritarianism in terms of government. And so people in this country and indeed throughout the world continue to adjust and to find ways in which to counter the rise of totalitarianism and oppression. So what do we do and who are we? I am reminded, one book that I am reading is John Lewis, Walking with the Wind, a memoir of the movement. Certainly those of you who are listening are familiar with John Lewis and his impact in our society. He begins this book, Walking the Wind, with an observation. He says, well, you know, I'm beginning this book not talking about anything monumental. He says, it's a simple story, a true story about a group of young children, a wood frame house, and a windstorm. In this epilogue, he begins by talking about how he and his friends, who were mostly his cousins, who gathered together one day. They were young, growing up towards the end of the Second World War, and he said, we were not familiar with what was going on in Europe and over the Pacific. The grown-ups talked about a world war, but we as children were just children, and we just enjoyed things. So he talks about his father's family saving enough money to buy 110 acres of cotton and corn and peanut field and you know, a very sturdy three-bedroom house. His father was very proud of that and actually was able to be a landowner and to have something in his name. And so he talks about the challenges they face and what happened. He writes, on one particular afternoon, which is Saturday, it's almost certain, about 15 of us children were outside my aunt's Geneva house, playing in her dirt yard. The sky began clouding over, the wind started picking up, lightning flashed off in the distance, and suddenly I wasn't thinking about playing anymore. I was terrified. I had already seen what lightning could do. I'd seen fields catch on fire after a hit to a haystack. I'd watched trees actually explode when a bolt of lightning struck them, the sap inside rising to an instant boil, the trunk swelling until it burst its bark. The sight of those stripes of pine bark snaking through the air like ribbons was both fascinating and horrifying. Lightning terrified me, and so did thunder. My mother used to gather us around wherever we heard thunder, and she'd tell us to hush. Be still now, because God was doing his work. That was what thunder was, my mother said. It was the sound of God doing his work. But my mother wasn't with us this particular afternoon. Aunt Suniva was the only adult around, and as the sky blackened and the wind grew stronger, she herded us all inside. Her house was not the biggest place around, and it seemed even smaller with so many children squeezed inside. Small and surprisingly quiet. All of the shouting and laughter that had been going on earlier outside had stopped. The wind was howling now, and the house was starting to shake. We were scared. Even Aunt Suniva was scared. And then it got worse. Now the house was beginning to sway. The wood plank flooring beneath us began to bend. And then a corner of the room started lifting up. I couldn't believe what I was seeing. None of us could. This storm was actually pulling the house toward the sky with us inside it. That was when Aunt Suniva told us to clasp hands. Line up and hold hands, she said. And we did what we were told. Then she had us walk as a group toward a corner of the room that was rising. From the kitchen to the front of the house, we walked, the wind screaming outside, sheets of rain bearing on the tin roof. Then we walked back to in the other direction as another end of the house began to lift. And so it went, back and forth, 15 children walking with the wind, holding the trembling house down with the weight of our small bodies. John Lewis continues, more than a half a century has passed since that day, and it has struck me now that once over those many years that our society is not unlike the children in the house, rocked again and again by the winds of one storm or another, the world around us seeming at times as if they might fly apart. It seemed that way in the 1960s, at the height of the Civil Rights Movement, when America itself felt as if might burst at the seams. So much tension, so many storms. But the people of conscience never left the house. They never ran away. They stayed. They came together as they did the best they could, clasping hands and moving towards the corner of the house that was the weakest. And then another corner would lift, and we would go there. And eventually, inevitably, the storm would settle, and the house will still stand. But we knew another storm would come, and we would have to do it all once over again. And we did. And we still do, all of us, you and I. Children holding hands, walking with the wind. This is America to me, not just a movement for civil rights, but the endless struggle to respond with decency, dignity, and a sense of brotherhood to all the challenges that face us as a nation, as a whole. The path involves nothing less than the pursuit of the most precious and pure concept that I have ever known. An ideal I discovered as a young man that has guided me like a beacon ever since. A concept called the beloved community. And then he ends this part by saying, let me tell you about my life. For John Lewis, America has been in a storm. An analogy he uses about the struggle to maintain our society. It's a story of a group of children moving from one side of the house to the other, trying to hold it down, going to the part of the house that was weak and holding it down. And so as it was true in the 1960s, it is true for us here in 2020s. We are in the midst of a storm. But this is not the first storm, and it won't be the last storm. So let us follow the wisdom of people such as John Lewis, and as they did on that stormy night in Alabama, clasp hands. Together we can go and struggle together and hold things down. Is there a part of the house that is being torn apart by the storm? Then we as a community must come together and go together and hold down that part of the house. We must struggle not only for ourselves, but for all who are in our house, all who are here. And so we struggle, and so we continue to pursue what we think is right, as we seek to continue to establish and to live into that concept that John Lewis called the beloved community. It is a struggle and something we must continue to do. And so, as John Lewis offers us that picture of a house that's being potentially torn apart by storm, and how people must gather together to work together, to find ways in which to struggle. Where are those parts of the houses that we are called to do and to protect? This weekend, I was at a meeting of a board I'm on, and on it, we were reminded that our house, there are many people in our house that are in trouble, and that we are called to be responsible. And specifically, we were called and urged to communicate immediately with the administration of universities in the Northwest regions where visas of foreign students are being revoked by the U.S. Department of Homeland Security. As of April 11th, 19 international students attending Oregon's three largest universities have had their visas revoked by the Department of Homeland Security, according to university officials. They include Oregon State University with 13, Portland State University with 3, one of whom is a grad student, and the University of Oregon with 4 students. According to Northwest Broadcasting, 4 students at the University of Idaho and 3 students at the Washington State University are among students nationwide who are having their student visas revoked by the Trump administration. It was also reported that at the University of Oregon, 3 foreign students have had their student visas revoked and face the possibility of deportation unless they voluntarily leave the country within 15 days. Additionally, faculty and researchers have already seen their budget slashed and fear further retribution if they can openly resist the administration's effort to remove foreign nationals. The number of students affected have increased, and more are at risk. And we are called, all of us, to uphold our vision of our society, to speak out against attacks on people because of their nationality, race, gender identity, and all who are in vulnerable positions. Those are things we are called to do and things that we are called to respond to. Not only university students, but we are seeing repeatedly immigrants and refugees who are being kidnapped and, quite frankly, subject to human trafficking, you know. Not due process, no hearing before a judge, but being kidnapped and, quite frankly, being tossed aside. Certainly not the values that many of us think of are the best of our society, and certainly things that we can struggle to change. And so, with the inspiration of John Lewis, who said that we must continue to work together, that's something we must continue to do. Not only students, but as I noticed, vulnerable, marginalized communities are at threat. And we are doing many things in many communities to build in a strong community and resistance. So, my friend, how do we continue to speak out and to support one another? What are things that you are doing and to support one another? Where, how is your community threatened? And what are you doing? What are we doing to respond? I began by reading a little bit from John Lewis' memoir of the movement. And in it, he talks about not only individual, not only personalities that we know of, but reflects on the fact that it takes all of us to do what we can where we can. It takes a movement to build a beloved community. Our numbers again are 503-231-8187. And we'll go to our caller, Santiago. Good morning. How are you?
Doing well, sir. How about yourself?
I'm okay. Yeah.
Wonderful. I think it really should be a lot bigger than it is right now. You know, what's going, I don't know, at least in the circles that I roll in, that I'm kind of adjacent to, more the normie circles, like, it doesn't seem like it's really clicking that, you know, having Mahmoud Khalil being deported, you know, as an actual citizen, you know, it doesn't seem like it's really clicking for a lot of normie folks.
Right.
Like, it's, and I think a lot of it is because, like, you know, there really isn't enough, at least from the people who are supposed to be the opposition, there isn't enough voicing of the fact that, that he's only being deported because he is saying that Palestinians should be free. You know, I think a lot of people don't really appreciate that. It's because, you know, I hear people say, well, you know, you can be pro-Palestine without being anti-Israel, but the fact of the matter is that, you know, being anti-Israel isn't about being anti-Semitic or, you know, hating the Jewish people. It's saying that your nation state has no right to trample over the autonomy of another group of people.
And,
you know, and
yeah. I don't want you to, you know, I want you to assert again, because, you know, certainly people, it doesn't seem like enough people are paying attention, but the fact that this man, and he's only one of who knows how many, who was picked up because of what they said.
Yes. I mean, and that's nothing new in terms of America, but I think it's really important because, you know, we've got a lot of liberals and progressives believing we can vote our way out of this.
Mm-hmm.
And we just, like you're saying, you know, it's like John Lewis was saying, man, if there's something being wrecked, you know, if the house is being picked up by one side, then all the people need to go stand on that side and hold it down. And honestly, there's just not enough folks who are, you know, and I'm gonna call it out, there's not enough white folks who are seeing themselves in the shoes of Mahmoud Khalil. Because, yeah, I've had a lot of my friends who are, to my dismay, are very pro-Israel, but are actually speaking out on behalf of Mahmoud Khalil, and the people who are like the people that I've seen who are pro-Israel are now calling her a traitor because she's... And it's like, no, you don't understand. Like, this dude is being picked up for saying stuff. He has no criminal record. He hasn't done anything wrong other than say that, that the people of Palestine should be free. And there's just not enough white people who are seeing themselves in Mahmoud's shoes.
And that's
a big ask for people who have been generation after generation comforted by the lie that America is a democracy, or that America is free, or that America is a force of good in the world. It's a big ask for a lot of people who are under the assumption that America has been a force for good in the world, when the people who have spoken the truth otherwise have been disappeared or assassinated.
Well, let's put out the appeal or the ask, why aren't more white people speaking out? And
no. Go ahead.
No, that's all. Why aren't they speaking out until people are threatened?
Because white people, there's a really great meme that's going around that says white people need to start seeing white supremacy as a white problem rather than a black issue they need to sympathize with.
Mm.
You know, there's a lot of people who consider themselves the quote good white folks who would never think for a second to speak ill of somebody because of their race or color. But at the end of the day, we're not talking about individual acts. We're talking about systemic issues. And the system continues whether or not there's white people present. There's a really great book called Racism Without Racists. Mm-hmm. And it talks about how white supremacy, how it continues to propagate because it's more than just being like a thing that benefits people of a particular skin color, it's also an ideology that is geared towards the mechanisms of capitalism.
Right.
And I mean, Martin Luther King said it best. He said, you know, capitalism is the economic arm of white supremacy. Honestly, if you want to break it down in the capitalist sense, you know, people speaking out against Palestine is seen as a market intervention by the Democrats and the Republicans who were in office, because a lot of them ultimately benefit from the bombs being dropped. I mean, we just saw Cory Booker vote in favor of 35,000 more bombs after his 25-hour filibuster. So the fact that, like, there's so many people in government who are profiting from the companies that are selling the bombs to Israel, Mahmoud Khalil and people like him are just seen as market interventionists who are trying to stop the free flow of money across borders, free trade, right?
I'm going to put out the appeal to ask people to call in and to respond to this, because in terms of what does it take for people to respond, and certainly it's more than those federal legislators, and certainly they won't act. I think we all know they won't act until they're forced to act. So, what is
100%.
What is it that we can do, or what is it that needs to be done for movement to happen? And you know, it's any movement, and you can see that begins with a small number of people, and seldom is you know, it's sort of like, oh, it's easy, let's do this. It's a lot of hard work that a small group of people need to do. So I thank you for what you are doing and for the way you continue to call out injustice and organize. And I hope that other people are doing it in their ways. More people are able to do it because unless we do it, the house is ruined.
Well, you know, I agree, but I think the you know, from a revolutionary optimistic perspective, I mean, the fact that the Trump administration is laying bare the mechanisms of capitalism in a way that was covered up by all the rules of the neoliberal order, that he's wrecking all that, you know, that people are really seeing firsthand how they are being complicit in the system. And even if we don't all have the correct ideology to run on just yet, the fact that people are seeing it or being outraged and that the system has to respond,
in some way is actually pretty
encouraging.
Let me ask you particularly about this, because I had a conversation with some people who are Trump-like and who said, yeah, he's tearing down this system because it hasn't worked for me, it hasn't worked for my generation, and let's tear it all down. So, you know, go Trump, go. How do you respond to that?
No, he's not, here's the thing. He's not wrecking the system in favor of the little guy. He's wrecking the system in favor of the business owners. Because at the end of the day, these tariffs that he keeps going back and forth on, what they're doing is they're creating market instability on a global level, and they're trying to destabilize particularly China and India as growing forces in the world in order to pull more resources towards the United States. This has nothing to do with the little guy, because, you know, I mean, he's talking about bringing jobs back. Nobody's even started construction on manufacturing facilities that would even begin to fill the kind of jobs that people need to be able to create the type of production that we need. And number two, the other part of it is that, you know, the reason why factory jobs were so stable and so highly sought is because of the labor organizing that went into bringing rights to workers. Because before labor organizing,
right,
factories were death camps.
Okay, well,
you would die on the floor. So it's, if you're gonna talk to Trumpsters about it, say, well, where are the trade unions that gave you those good wages? You know,
where are the factories
that are being built for those jobs that are supposedly coming? When you ask them to stop talking about abstract ideas and concrete reality, they fall apart instantly.
Okay. Hey, thank you so much. And let's just continue to talk and to organize people. Thank you for your perspective and all that you've said this morning. Let's continue with More Talk Radio. Our last caller shared some of his perspective on things that we should do to create a more just society. Let's hear what Janet has to say. Good morning.
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm thinking it's very difficult in the morning to get bearings when we're there's so many ominous things out there, like you brought out with your story about the cabin and the kids moving over to the corner.
Mm-hmm.
I was reminding myself about Zora Neale Hurston's Moses, Man on the Mountain, because right now, as a Jewish person, and my black granddaughter, who's got my great-grandson, she said to me, well, you're white, Nana, when she was about two or something.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if you're familiar with the depth of that profound soul-searching book that Zora Neale Hurston wrote to really relate the struggle, as she saw it, in Egypt to the suffering of people in the South. And the problems with slavery, I think Santiago is really bringing it to bear about social inequality. And then the brilliant way that Sir Neil Hurston is bringing out the importance, I think, the way I interpret it, because I think we're looking at something, and then it could be a theory or a poem or this, that, or the other, is where it takes us. That it can be provocative, and that we can register what the meaning is, very existential moment at this point in time for myself and everyone else, that we recognize that the responsibility that we take with our own humanity. For me, Sir Neil Hurston is bringing, let's look at the bigger picture. For me, where I take that is to my granddaughter and to my great grandson. You know, that I'm not just some white woman or my Jewish background, but that I'm a global citizen. And what do I do as a teacher, a sovereign, and a parent, or hopefully some kind of leader, is to become stable. For myself, frankly, the whole notion of stable instability that we do in Tai Chi for Sui, what's the limits of our stability that we can anchor ourselves? And the rabbi that I knew in Brooklyn, who's in Ashland right now, talked about, well, we all need to find our own peace. So that registers that we can actually find our own peace, and then not go hog wild. That Sir Neil Hurston, what a profoundly huge, compassionate, wise understanding that she had to share with us, that the problem of slavery is not, that the people, you know, that thought about the whole subject of Passover and the freeing of the slaves, and what do we do that creates the great divide? It would be to develop humanity as global citizens and have global altruism. And Santiago is right. We got to kind of develop a mindset and a compassion that homelessness and feeding kids matters a lot more than these rich, greedy psychopaths getting everything. I don't really know what to say, but
hey, you're saying a lot, and you know, thank you for raising Sir Neil Hurston. The book is Moses, Man of the Mountain, how appropriate, you know, this season, Passover, freedom, the struggle for liberation. I will check out that book. Thank you
so
much.
Take it easy.
All right. And you're listening to More Talk Radio here on your community radio station, KBOO FM. Our last caller, Janet, was sharing some of her thoughts about her family, mixed race, multi-religious family. And she shared with us Sir Neil Hurston, a writer of the 1920s, 1930s, Sir Neil Hurston, and some of you might be familiar with her book, Their Eyes Were Watching God, and her work in terms of anthropology, cultural anthropology in the South. But she wrote another book, a novel, Moses, Man of the Mountain. So that's something we should check out. And part of, I think, thing that I received from Janet was that we need to continue to struggle, continue to share the story with one another. And as she shared this, the story of talking with her grandchild and great-grandchild, and what that meant, what that mean, and going back to our first caller who reminded us that we as a society must find ways to struggle and to support one another is so important. You are listening to More Talk Radio on your community radio station, KBOO-FM. Our numbers here are 503-231-8187. I'm Cecil Prescott, and we began this morning by reading a little bit from John Lewis, Walking with the Wind, a memoir of the movement, in which he talks about not only he talks about the movement, but in a way in which we realize it's more than seeking specific legislation, although those legislation is important. It's more than speaking out against injustice, although that is very, very important. But success, in part, I think, is it measured by the community we build, what type of society we create. How are we? How are the children? How are we as a society? So what are things that we can do to make sure that other people hear us? Santiago began issued a challenge earlier today by asking, there aren't enough people, and he said specifically white people, who feel threatened enough to stand up for those vulnerable populations right now. Are they? Well, where are they, and what are people doing? Our number is here, 503-231-8187. We appreciate your calls and your reflection on how people are building community, how people are moving from one side of the house to the other to protect the weakest part of the house. I began by sharing, urging many of us to write and be concerned about the many students who are having their visas revoked, and things we can do. Let's go to our next caller. Rom is calling. Good morning.
Good morning. Yes, I wanted to chime in a little bit with you. As far as Santiago was saying about the trade wars that the tariffs are happening, devastating. But I also believe that this is really is an opportunity to operate from this rubble now that is becoming to come down and to create new ways of supporting ourselves in the community and in the world. I was hearing on Democracy Now! About somebody from India who was saying that this, you know, the textile industry being so devastated is also pointing a light, shining a light on what, how much is exported and how much labor and energy is spent in propping up these systems, and that now they can begin to focus on local energies and local supporting each other locally, and instead of exporting it. So there is some possibility in that, I believe. And I am a retired electrician, and I spent years propping up Intel and propping up other places, and you know, I believe strongly in union labor, but we also create the industries that we hate. We create the oil refineries and the processing centers that are devastating our world. So there is that balance as well, that we can go, we have to be creative, we have to go in different directions to build the industry that we want to see, and build it in the way, not just fall back into line, fall back into place. And as far as the structures that don't work for us,
that's important. Yeah, I appreciate your analysis and reminding us to examine deeply. I mean, what type of society we have, and what type of world we want to create, and that analysis of our history and what it takes. That's important. Thank you, Ram, for sharing with us this morning. I appreciate your thoughts, and I hope you call again. You're listening to More Talk Radio here in your community radio station, KBOO-FM. I'm Cecil Prescott, and let's go to Linda. Good morning.
Well, good morning, Cecil, and listeners on this Monday morning. I had dreams. I'm a white lady about getting towards 73, but I've been an activist my whole life because I was grew up in the Bay Area with all kinds of colors of people, and I loved them all. So I don't, you know, I still do.
Yeah.
But I had dreams of equality and justice, economic equality, and no more wars and all that good stuff. And here I sit in 2025 with what we've got.
Hey,
and
could you have imagined? I mean, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
But, oh, no.
When what you said just resonates so well with me, I'm sort of like, okay, I did all this work, we did all this stuff, and here we are in 2025, and this is it? I'm sorry.
Yes. And so I put those dreams that I still have hold, they're on, let's say, the second tier.
Okay.
The first tier is democracy versus fascism. And that is the only thing I'm seeing right now. All my energy is going to that focus. So I'm working, I live in Salem, thank goodness, you know what, a mile from the Capitol.
Okay.
I hooked up with the Invisible Group because they are, I would say, the most successful and active right now about activism. And I go to all the rallies, but a group of us go sideways and we make buttons and they say things like, you're next. And we wear them out in public.
Okay.
And I think people that are listening know what that means.
Yes.
First you come for the black people, you come from the brown people, now we're coming for the, you know,
coming for my 401k. Yeah.
And now we're coming for old people because they're too expensive to keep track of, so let's get them off of Medicare. The people that need food and they're in the food lines, let's get rid of them.
Yeah.
Then we got RFK Jr. in the health thing, so we'll all probably all die of a disease in the near future. Just kidding.
Yeah,
but, you know, when I'm out at the rallies, I think 3,000 or more came to the Capitol at the last rally. That's a lot for Little Salem. We're and this creative science builds such camaraderie. We're making friends and spinning off somewhere. We have book clubs down here. I'm a facilitator of a book club, and we're reading books and having really good discussions. But all those people that I'm talking to are writing letters.
Yes.
They're calling up the White House. They're resisting at every step. And throwing some money to Bernie and AOC. What the heck? They're going to all the swing states that we lost to educate those people. They obviously need educating if 77 million people voted for the Orange Ape. And, you know, and I work at a local food bank, and we donate food, you know, when we go to the grocery store and they got something on sale, we buy it and store it away and take it the next couple days to the food bank.
You know, Linda, so, I'll let you finish. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I just want to say that, I don't know, I feel like I'm in the opposite position as Santiago. I hear him every day on every radio station.
Oh.
He's talking. He's knowledgeable. He's talking. But I never hear what he's doing. I never hear a solution out of him.
Oh, you know,
he represents people that are feeling the same way as him.
Yeah.
No solutions.
Well, I can't speak for Santiago, but I'm sure he will, you know, when he'll call again or when you speak to him, you can ask him specifically what are you doing, and I think what you shared today, you shared specifically things that you are doing, and among the what I'm taking from our conversation today, there are many multiple ways. So you can go to a rally, you can be in a book group, you can work at a local food pantry. There are, you can write letters to legislators. There are many different ways in which people can you can make buttons, ways to resist this authoritarianism, and create awareness and change. And you offer some examples of things that you, as an older person, is doing and thank you so much, because
and then just see. So one last thing. Thank you for recapping. You know, because I talk fast and it's good for the listeners to get to hear it twice. Maybe they're taking notes. But we have got to all get on the same page. We're doing fascism against democracy right now. We aren't going to have all those things that we want. Unions, you know, bringing back jobs and making manufacturing. We're not going to have any of that if we don't fight fascism at our door. And that is it. That's where we're at.
Okay. Good. Okay, good work. Continue work, and thank you so much for us.
I will. And Cecil, have a great week, and thanks for being here for us.
Thank you. And you're listening to More Talk Radio on your community radio station. Our last caller, Linda, was sharing some of the activities that she is doing, and partially in response to a query from an earlier caller, Santiago, where are people doing? What are white people doing? And Linda shared with us some things that she is doing that I think people should know. She's over 70 years old, but she has been an activist for many, many years, and she listed some things that she are doing. Working at a food pantry, a food bank, writing letters to legislators, participating in rallies, joining and being a part of book discussion groups. There are many ways in which people are expressing their opposition, their resistance to this regime that we are under. And it's also a challenge to say, what more can I do? Am I doing enough? And I think if everyone identify what they can do, and it's more than an individual action, because what we are doing, I would like to say, what I desire, what people like John Lewis desire, what I'm sure others are desiring, is this new community that looks out for one another. The beloved community is a phrase that has been used, that has been embraced by many, such as John Lewis. And as our callers have shared with us, this beloved community is under threat. And unless we continue to resist in different ways, it will overwhelm us. But it cannot and it will not overwhelm us as long as we continue to speak out. And as John Lewis reminded us, that we speak out because we must. We have no other choice. And because we all can do things in our communities in our particular ways. There are many things that we can do. We can speak with our grandchildren and great-grandchildren, as Janet reminded us, and talk about and share with them not only our past, but what are ways that we can do right now. We can listen to those who challenge us. Are we doing enough? Are we doing anything? And although we might have said, oh, I heard it before, sometimes we need to be challenged and ask, well, am I doing enough? I've heard you said that before, but am I doing enough, or can I do more? Am I helping to build our community stronger? There are many ways in which people are doing. And one call to action I began this morning and want to remind us is the need to speak out for those who are being round up, kidnapped, and trafficked to places who know where. Certainly against the ideals of our society, and certainly against all sense of human decency. We need to continue to speak out. And I began earlier by asking us to continue to pay attention to the universities and colleges where visas of foreign students are being revoked by the U.S. Department of Homeland Security. Dozens of students have had their visas revoked, including 13 from OSU, 3 from PSU, and a grad, and 4 from University of Oregon. This is as of April 11th. There's probably more since that time. And so there are things that we can do that in the midst, we can stand up. As this person reminded me, as Oregonians, the values we hold regarding diversity and equal opportunity for all residents compel us to speak out against attacks on people because of race, nationality, gender identity, and federal policies making unique groups more vulnerable. And that includes international students. As someone reminded us earlier, the quote from Nemo, the first they come from one group, and then they come from another group, and then they come from another group. And we've seen this this administration operating by the playbook of fascism, by attacking vulnerable populations, vulnerable communities, and by taking under their power institutions. So we see institutions folding, and we haven't even spoken this morning about the law firms who are bowing down before the president and his administration, and what horrible things that might do. So we see the folding of institutions, higher educations, the collapse of education, and the need to stand up. There are many things that we can do and many things that people continue to do. So in this age in which people are frustrated, in which people say there's not enough that can be done, do not be discouraged. Take the wisdom of people such as John Lewis, who in the continue pressing on because they had a community. See, it's more than individuals. It's building community, as communities, building communities of resistance. And people are doing that right now. I want to commend those of you who are organizing, continue to organize lobby days in Salem to identify particular legislations that you're advocating for. That is so important. Our legislators need to hear from us, and we can make a difference. So organize with your community. There are groups and communities who organize in lobby days, in which you can go down to Salem, address the legislators, testify. And if you do not have the time or the ability to go down to Salem, there are things you can do. You can write letters. You can email. There are things you continue to do. So thank you all for resisting the enemy, recognizing that there are no enemies ultimately. That there is one humanity, and there is one planet that we have. Unless Elon Musk, take over Mars, but until now, there's only one planet we have, and we have to save it. So thank you all for all that you continue to do, continue to be informed, continue to agitate, continue to make a difference in your community, and do so with an attitude of love, because what we are building ultimately is a society for all people, a community where all can live in peace and justice. Continue to listen. Thank you all for all that you are doing. Thank you all who are members of this community, KBOO. It is so important to support nonprofit media resources. I'm Cecil Prescott. You have been listening to More Talk Radio on KBOO FM. We will see you next time. Next week, we will talk a little bit about Earth Day next Monday. Earth Day is next week. Take care, and we will see you next time.
You're listening to Community Radio KBOO Portland.
Got troubles.